Welcome to the Sober Awakening Podcast, where we empower individuals to cultivate a sober mindset and deepen their intuitive connection to the divine spark within. I'm Tim Lyons, the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to providing inspiration, resources, and community support for sober-minded individuals seeking spiritual growth and purpose. Please note that Sober Awakening does not have a financial relationship with any businesses, products, or services mentioned in this podcast. Any mentions are shared solely because they align with our mission to support your journey towards sobriety, self-discovery, and spiritual fulfillment. Now let's dive in and journey toward a life of clarity, connection, and empowerment together. Hey everybody, you are back on the Sober Awakening Podcast. I am the host, the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening, Tim Lyons, and I am here today with my new friend, Kelly Kitley. Kelly is a licensed clinical social worker with over 20 years of experience in the field. She's a sought-after national mental health media expert, speaker, and author of an award-winning Amazon bestseller, Myself. Kelly owns Serendipitous Psychotherapy and specializes in treating adults with anxiety, depression, relationships, trauma, and alcohol abuse issues. She is a wife and mom of four teenagers, and that in itself, Kelly, is just an accomplishment right there. I only have one. My wife and I have one, and she's 23. But this is Kelly, everybody. So, Kelly, welcome to the Sober Awakening Podcast. Thank you for blessing us with your presence today. Did I hit on everything you was that an acceptable opening?
That was wonderful. Thank you okay. So much, Tim.
Because I always leave room for correction. We just kind of make it up as we go along here.
I hear and that.
Yeah, you actually come with quite an impressive resume. I think when we were connected, we had an introductory email go back and forth between us, and then you Facebook requested me and we connected, and I started looking at all the places you have been and the things you have done, and you're very well known. You've been on TV a number of times. You have the thriving business that you do, at least that's what it looks like from the outside. You've been at it for what, 20 years now?
Yeah. You know, it's evolved and it's a labor of love. It's my act of service. You know, I don't get paid for any of the media appearances. I do it to psychoeducate our country and our world about mental health and alcohol abuse. So I've been very fortunate. I'm a one-stop shop, kind of pitch my own stuff and book it. And, if they let me, they invite me on to talk about things that I'm really passionate about.
Okay. And so anyway, you are here because you were referred to me by a mutual friend. Had not met you before, just the last few minutes when we were briefly getting acquainted. But you come from a past of partying. You liked to drink. You did drink. You told me you are on a sobriety journey. When we were getting acquainted, did you say you were 12 years sober now?
I am. Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I tell people that I have been on the sobriety journey for 10 years. Now, if you really want to get down to the nitty gritty and go back to the AA purists, my actual sober time is 6 years. So I had a slip there, but you know, I'm kind of from the school that I put all the time together. It was from the time when I made the decision that I was going to fess up and be accountable to myself. And I went to my wife and I said, hey, this is it. I've got a problem. I'm going to quit. You know, and I didn't go to AA at first. I white knuckled. I did all the things and I had a couple slips at the beginning, but it's been 6 years of pure sobriety. But for all my purposes, I tell people I've been on the journey 10 years.
I love it. It is a journey. Absolutely.
Yeah. 10 years since I made the decision to do it. And at the end of it, though, at the end of my drinking career, and I don't know yours, I was 24/7 drunk. I could not function without alcohol in my system. I woke up at 3 a.m. with withdrawals from the night before. I was having that. Not only was I physically sick from the withdrawal, but the anxiety was the worst part at 3 a.m. And so what do? You take a couple of drinks to get yourself back to sleep. And that gets your cycle going for the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was the type of person that I could function. And I never was rolling around all day drunk, mm-hmm. like, oh, hey, what's going on? But I always had to have that alcohol in my system, because when I didn't have that maintenance dose in me, I would withdraw. So that's kind of me. Mm-hmm. In a nutshell. So what is Kelly's story? Where did it all start with you as far as alcohol use, alcohol and or other substances? What?
All right.
Where do you come from, Kelly?
Let's go. I come from growing up above my parents' bar in Lincoln Park, a neighborhood of Chicago, very close to Wrigley Field. My grandfather owned the bar. My dad owns the bar. My brother, who's also sober, manages the bar now, and had my first drink when I was 12. I couldn't wait to see what all of this excitement was about. And, you know, it was a neighborhood bar. So like all my friends' parents went there. The teachers from our school would go there for happy hour. I just lived in a drinking saturated culture, as we all do, but this was exceptionally saturated.
That's hard.
Sure.
That's a lot of fun. Your whole social network is hanging out at the bar and you're having drinks. I'm the first person to say, like, it wasn't until the end when drinking became a nightmare for me that I had to stop. There were years and years of a lot of good times.
Absolutely. And my memories are so good from growing up there. The jukebox, the pool table, the popcorn machine. You know, I had lemonade stands out in front of the bar, and all the regulars would come support my business, you know? And my grandparents drank. I mean, it was just, I have a long family line of addiction, and a lot of sobriety too, which, is great, 'cause I knew where to go. But growing up in the bar business really made me decide that I wanted to become a social worker. Went to an all girls Catholic school, for high school. And we sure did our fair share of drinking there. But I also, part of my story, you know, I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and that kind of morphed into an eating disorder. So when you're eating disordered and you're drinking, I chose to drink Southern Comfort instead of beer, like everybody else I was around, because I didn't want the extra calories. And so I was a binge drinker. And it was really this dichotomy of who I wanted to be. There were two parts. There was this, you know, service-oriented social worker person at a young age, and then this let loose, party hard, blackout, say and do things I regret side of me. And I really embraced both of them. Continued into college drinking that way. And I would give it up for marathon training or 40 days of Lent or dry January, because I wanted to prove to myself I didn't have a problem. If I can give it up, then I don't have a problem.
Yeah, I don't mean to cut you off, but Lent triggered a memory there. When I was in my second year of school at Marquette, which I just told you I was at, I was about 20, I think 23. Yeah, I was 23 at the time. And I quit for Lent. I gave up alcohol for Lent because I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it. And unfortunately, I proved to myself that I could do it, which then was a permission slip to see, well, see, I can
get it. You got it. And we're roughly the same age. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm coming off talking to you about a lot of media presence because April's Alcohol Awareness Month. And so I've been out educating. And, you know, alcohol use is along a spectrum, right? For me, it used to be like, am I an alcoholic or am I not? And I kept like trying to figure out ways that I wasn't by these qualifiers, right? I could stop. I didn't drink during the day. Oh, sometimes I could have three drinks. Other times I would have more than that, you know, and I was consumed with counting and assessing and trying to manage and control. And today, I think, you know, in January, the Surgeon General came out with a warning about alcohol use being associated with 7 cancers. And so, you know, similarly to cigarettes, where they slapped a label on and every time I smoked, you know, picked up a pack of cigarettes and it said, warning, this may cause cancer, I would pause and I'd still smoke the cigarette. But the recommendation is for that label to be put on alcohol. So it's really about educating, you know, about alcohol in general. But, you know, if somebody's drinking all day, every day, you can't moderate, you can't practice moderation management, you know, and you actually need a medical detox for that, or you could have a seizure. You know, educating about that spectrum, as well as, you know, people who do want to moderate or be more mindful with their drinking. You know, I tried that for years before I gave it up completely and now practice abstinence.
Okay. And, you know, you sound like you're telling me exactly all of the mental gymnastics that I would go through with mm-hmm. myself. And for years and years, I could count and moderate. The ability to do that became, my ability to do that became less and less, especially as I moved into the years between 35 and 40. Being 51 now, 40 is when I cut it off, when I just, for a lot of reasons, I had to stop. But with you, what was your tipping point? How bad did it get? Like I said, I had to drink 24/7 the last couple months or I would get sick. Mm-hmm. And then what made you decide to stop? So I guess there's two questions in there.
Sure. So, I mean, I binge drank for 20 years, you know, where it would be like, I'd go to a Cubs game, I'd black out, I would swear off drinking for the next 3 months. Then it was a slippery slope, right? Then I'd like have a couple and be really reserved. And then I was off to the races again. And then another incident would happen that I'd beat myself up for and, you know, have consequences for and not like myself very much. And then the drinking would slip back in. You know, I have 4 teenagers now, but they were 6, 4, 2, and 9 months when I got sober. And, you know, my drinking progressed through parenthood, having kids of those ages and that close together and working full time. I felt so overwhelmed. I had postpartum anxiety. And my drinking went from binge drinking to then drinking every day. Once I got home from work, my husband's an actor. And so oftentimes I would have the morning shift and at work and he would work at night. And so it was a passing of a baton, so to speak, for parenting. And I met my husband in my parents' bar when I was in college. So that was very much a big part of our relationship as well. He drinks normally. And continues to not have a problem with alcohol. But for me, it just, the last year of my drinking was pretty much every day. And I just surrendered to the fact that, oh, moms are stressed. And like, isn't this what parenthood is like? And fell into the whole mom culture and memes of it's wine o'clock somewhere, you know, where's mommy's sippy cup? Mom needs wine. Yeah. Yeah.
You see it all over the place, right? It's just everywhere. Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I had all the information, Tim. Like, I studied addiction in grad school. I worked in intensive outpatient treatment for substance abuse. And as I mentioned, you know, having a lot of addiction in my family, everybody's addiction looked very different. So I would always use qualifiers like, well, I never got a DUI or I never went to jail or, you know, never lost a job. Uber, responsible, you know, but all of that was killing me inside. It was once I recognized my best friend from growing up since freshman year of high school had stopped drinking 3 months before me. And she started going to AA. I thought she was being so extreme and I lost my drinking buddy. But I observed her shift. And one morning after, you know, a Saturday night of drinking at home with my husband and parenting, I met my friend for a workout class, and I was so hungover, and she walked me to my car and it started pouring rain. And she's like, "Hey, I just wanted to check in with you. How's your drinking been?" And I just started sobbing. And I said, "I'm obsessed. I can't stop thinking about it. I know I need to stop. I don't know how." And she said, because still I didn't think I was quote unquote an alcoholic. I just knew I needed to stop. And she said, "Or you could come to a women's meeting with me." And I was like, "But I have all these open bottles of wine in my refrigerator. I've got to drink those first." And she said, "Or you could throw them out." And I drove home that Sunday morning and listening to music, and it was a very spiritual awakening for me. And I came home and said to my husband, "I've got to go to an AA meeting. I think I have a problem with alcohol." And he's like, "Or you could try to drink less." So then I was trying to convince him to support me in this journey of not drinking. And you know what? I had no idea what I was doing. I promised my friend that I would go to this meeting with her. I didn't know if I would drink or not until the meeting, but I didn't, and hadn't picked up a drink since. And my life has changed and improved beyond measure.
Awesome. That is incredible. I am so glad that you caught yourself where you did. A lot of us don't do that. I was in your boat, though, where I always told myself I knew I drank too much, but I was okay. I never lost a job, never got a DUI. I've been successfully married for 25 years, and I am a good husband. You know, I haven't done anything wrong. You know what, though, looking back, I was a really crappy version of myself in all of those things.
Yeah.
And it's not that I couldn't have ever gotten a DUI or lost a job. Those things could have happened. They just didn't yet, you know? For me, my bottom personally was I was having a hard time paying the bills, and I was seriously researching what would happen to my credit score if I was late on or skipped a mortgage payment. And that was it for me. Other people, it's different things. But for me, it's like, I have to protect that credit score. I've got a girl who's going into college. She was just starting to go a couple years away from going to Catholic high school. You know, I was like, I have to be the provider for the family. As long as I can provide and drink, the drinking's okay.
Sure.
But, you know,
I'm only hurting myself. It's not involved in anybody else's life.
Bingo. So that was the first thing that was the real thing that made me finally realize I had to sober up. So that was it for me. Now I quit white knuckled, and then it's when I relapsed from the white knuckling that I really spiraled downwards. But that was the start of the journey for me. So how did, your husband, you said is a normie, quote unquote.
Yes. He, you know, comes from a big Irish Catholic family, and, like us, the normalization of alcohol just being celebratory and, part of culture, you know, was exposed at a young age as well, but, you know, gratefully for them, nobody in their family has addiction.
Yeah. So, your husband, much like my wife, drinks, but my wife is the type of person from the sober awakening standpoint. We talk about two different types of people in our audience. One is the type of person who is sober, abstinent, sober. The other segment that we hope we appeal to is the sober-minded. And those are people who, like my wife, probably like your husband, if alcohol were to go away from the world tomorrow, it's nothing they would miss. My wife goes out to dinner and she orders a glass of wine, and she will leave half of the thing on the table. She'll drink like half of it. I never would have done that. I would have had at least three glasses the course of dinner, at least three. And if anything was left over in her glass, I'd be like getting up from the table.
Slam
that puppy back.
No, don't let anything go to waste.
Absolutely. So something else, and as you were talking about your experience, what made you, you know, your journey through alcohol and your decision to quit, now, do you still call yourself an alcoholic?
Oh my goodness.
I do not.
Loaded word. I don't either. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's changed. There was such a relief for me in showing up in a 12-step meeting and saying that I was, because if I owned it, I knew how to treat it, right? As a clinician, and not treating myself, but like, if I have a problem with alcohol, my solution is that I can't drink. Today, you know, alcohol, the word alcoholic isn't even a medical term, you know? And so it is more, I have a problem with alcohol. I don't like to label myself, or any of my clients. It's just how alcohol wasn't working for me in my life. And I can tell you a number of reasons it wasn't. And so I don't drink anymore. And you know, I will have people say to me, like, do you still think about it? And, you know, sure, there are times where I'm like, oh, I wonder what it would be like. And it's not, I wonder what it would be like, I only want one or two. I know that's not the end. It is more of, it's just not an option for me. It's not even a choice. I mean, it is a choice, but for me, I tell myself it's not an option. I'm just playing with fire if I go back.
Right. Right. So you are now sober. That was your journey. Obviously, you have done amazing things since becoming sober. You are very grounded in your sobriety. With what we do at Sober Awakening, though, that is all about spiritual awakening in sobriety. Because what I find is that once the initial quote-unquote pink cloud, whatever we want to call it, wears off, you know, a lot of people, they get bored. They're kind of lost. I describe it, sobriety, especially that first year, as like you're on a boat, right? And you're headed out to the ocean and your drinking life is behind you. Mm-hmm. And you're watching that shoreline get smaller and smaller and smaller. And you're excited to see that life left behind you. And then you're at a point where it's gone. You are sober, you're grounded mm-hmm. in your sobriety, you can't see the old shoreline anymore, but you turn around and there's the ocean and there's nothing out there. And it's just you in the middle of the ocean. You know there's a destination, you know there's another shore you're going to, but you can't see it. You don't know exactly when you're going to be there. You don't know what's there. You think it's pretty damn awesome, but mm-hmm. all you are is out in the middle of the ocean and you need something. And that's where I think, for me at least, the voice started creeping in. Mm. I started going back to church, looking for something spiritual. That wasn't cutting it. I got into meditation. That opened up a whole new world for me about 6 years ago now. And now I do all the things. I do go to Catholic church. Still, I look at it with totally different eyes, but I explore Hindu tradition. I love Buddhism. I love Egyptian Hermeticism. I jump in and explore all the quote unquote woo woo things. Sure. I explore all the healing modalities, from breath work to Reiki to grounding, all the things. So what about you spiritually? You said you went to an all-girls Catholic school, so you were raised Catholic. Where are you at with that now? Or where were you when you started drinking? And what's your progression been in that arena, the spiritual side?
So I feel like I was born into the world an old soul. I'm the oldest of five. I always gravitated towards older people, probably from the bar, you know, being around a lot of adults. But I remember at a really young age being super curious. You know, my parents, growing up in the city of Chicago, public school wasn't an option. So my parents aren't even Catholic. I mean, they're Christian, but Catholic school was really the only option. And it was right down the street from the bar. So that was a no-brainer. But I remember loving like the ritual of it and the symbolism. And I'd ask if we could go to church. And I loved singing. And it was just always present in my life. You know, and then in Catholic high school, doing campus ministry and a lot of volunteer work. And, but I looked at it as like, as long as I was good, Kelly, I, you know, and was behaving and doing what I'm supposed to do, then God was happy with me. And then there was this other part that was, oh my gosh, I'm so ashamed of some of the things that I've done. And if he's watching, then I'm in trouble. And it was more of this like shame-based religious mindset. And then I would, you know, have these amazing retreats. You know, I hiked Machu Picchu in Peru with one of my best friends, and we got to the top and it was like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful. I feel God here. You know, putting myself in spiritual places, I felt super connected. But then I'd go back to my day-to-day life and it just kind of went away. And then, you know, like my binge drinking and alcohol, I was always looking for my next spiritual fix. And for me, marathons were very spiritual too. And then, you know, when I got sober, and that was a huge component of Alcoholics Anonymous, I started looking at my relationship differently and seeing my relationship spiritually as, through the lens of connection and nature. And, you know, I remember early in sobriety, I was sitting on my porch drinking a cup of coffee and our four kids were playing outside. And it was like, for the first time in my entire life, I felt just being there in the moment. Like, I wasn't worried about anything. I wasn't overthinking. I wasn't micromanaging. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to go to Peru to feel God. I could sit on my steps and gosh, I could do this multiple times a day. And so that turned into journaling and, you know, all the healing things you talked about too. And yeah, I'm spiritually curious. I think we all have it within us. There's just so many things that is blocking it. And so when I'm working with clients, I try to break down that barrier too. And that could be, you know, like anytime I do an assessment and I ask somebody what their spirituality life is like, they're like, oh, I'm not religious. I don't go to church. And it's different, right? But like anybody who is brought up in the church assumes that spirituality is like, you're a good churchgoer or not. Kind of like I got wrapped up in like, I'm a good AA-er or not. You know? Following the rules, I am a rule breaker. So those were hard for me.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it's kind of funny. AA, I have found, was amazing for me, but it's something that I don't go to as much anymore. I'm not as religious about going to meetings. I've just filled that void with other things. Now, of course, the old timers, I'll run into one of them at Starbucks or whatever. They'll be like, where you been? Oh, and I mean, they're worried. Because you can make AA your religion. To some Absolutely. Extent. Mm-hmm. And I think you draw an interesting, you know, something there that we talk about a lot. You know, there's religion and there's spirituality. Mm-hmm. You know, your religion is a lot of those different things I mentioned before, like Catholicism or the Hindu faith or, you know, anything like that. Spirituality is basically what is your relationship with God, source, mm-hmm. all that is, you know, what do you feel in your heart? Mm-hmm. You know, and does your religion best allow you to express and explore that? I think.
Yeah.
You know, so what are you doing from a religious perspective right now? Are you still going to Catholic church or what's your practice?
I'm a Cheaster, Christmas and Easter churchgoer. Our kids were baptized in the Catholic Church, made First Communion. But then we decided whatever path they were on after that was kind of up to them and that we would expose them to, you know, different faiths. And, you know, then I tried like New Age Christian church where there's like a rock band and things like that. And I really got into that for a while. My husband thought it was a little too cultish, so he wasn't really into that. And now it's more of just a daily practice of like lighting a candle, praying. I still get on my knees at the end of the day and say a prayer. I talk to God throughout the day. Prayer is talking to God for me. Meditating is listening. And just, you know, driving in my car and listening to music feels like super spiritually connected for me. So it's finding moments of ahas, kind of, I call them.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that God ever talks back to you? And do you know how to listen to that voice? I tell people that when I got into meditation is when I first found the voice of God, higher self, the Holy Spirit. I don't care what you want to call it. I tell people, you know, when you grow up Catholic and we go to, you know, Catholic school, we have religion class, we do all the things, we go to church. It's all one-way prayer, right? Dear God, how do I do this? Or no, dear God, thank you. Dear God, please. Dear God, thank you. Dear God, please. But we are never taught how to sit and listen in silence to what comes back to us. And that's what I found in meditation. I don't know where you stand with that, but I literally tell people when you get good at it and when you get used to listening to the voice, I've sometimes heard voices in my head. Sometimes I see images. Sometimes it's just an inner knowing. Mm. But you will find the answers to everything you need in meditation when you really get good at being still and listening.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we're calling it God or spirit, like that force or source probably speaks to you seemingly more than it speaks to me. I don't necessarily hear a voice or like an inner intuition. It's more of like an energy, I think. Mm-hmm. There are certain times I've certainly wanted answers and haven't been able to decipher what they are. But more of just like, I run on the anxious side. So spirituality for me is very calming. Mm-hmm. And like God wrapping his arms around me and telling me it's okay. And to trust the process. There have been situations in my life that I had an intuitive feeling before sobriety and I didn't listen to it. And the result was negative. And so having moments like that and being like, gosh, I wish I would have just listened to what my intuition was.
Have you gotten better at listening to your intuition? Because that's the hardest damn part, I swear. It's like you have the intuition, you have the universe, God, creator, source, whatever, telling you what to do. But yeah, your ego-based self and your fear says, nope, we can't do that. You know, mm-hmm. that doesn't make any sense. Are you getting better at fighting through that? Because that's the challenge for most of us. It's not even learning to hear. It's acting on what we hear or feel or know.
Sure. Or not looking into it as like, oh, that was a sign. I'm really good about that. The rationalizing, you know, that we were talking about when we were drinking.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, oh, you know, in my book, I talk about God winks and those being kind of intuition. Okay. God kind of saying, I got you. Did you see that wink? Did you notice? Were you aware? So I have, but I still, you know, my blessing and my curse is I'm a go-getter. And so, you know, I need to listen more when God says not now, or it's not time, because I'm like, oh no, it's time. Mm-hmm. You know, and kind of plow through some of that stuff.
Would you say you have trouble with downtime? You have trouble with stillness? If you're a go-getter, you're kind of like got the energy of I always got to be making something happen.
Yeah.
And if I'm in neutral for a minute, it's not comfortable.
I've gotten much better with that because I love quiet now. It used to be a running away from, right? Mm-hmm. Before I got sober. Like I would have to make up for lost time of like being hungover the next day. So like if I was hungover on Sunday, on Monday, as soon as my feet hit the ground, I was like, go, 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 go. I didn't want to feel any of the feelings I had hungover. Now it's more kind of my personality is wired that way. And I crave downtime and quiet time and alone time. And so I'm good at taking that time. Sometimes it's, getting better at the listening. I still struggle with the listening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that's a work in progress for us for, you know, our whole life. Yeah. You know, I think that's half the battle of even being here in these bodies, you know, where, you know, we do have something inside of us that is not our body and it is part of something else. And why are we in these bodies? What are we even doing here? And I think part of it is just learning to reconnect with ourselves and seeing how cool stuff gets when we get out of our own way.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And it's something we struggle with our whole life. So has that played a part in the life you have built for yourself in sobriety at all? Can you correlate the two? Because you got sober, what, 12 years ago? You were already on your professional journey, mm-hmm. right? I assume things started getting a lot better or started to get a lot more exciting once you embraced sobriety. Is there a spiritual component or anything like that that you can correlate with your success mm-hmm. building your business, writing your book, all yeah. that stuff?
And the answer is yes to all of it. You know, I started writing my book 10 years before I published it in 2017 about growing up above the bar and sexual assault and an eating disorder. And, you know, this was in between. My kids helped keep me sober for 9 months at a time, too, you know, because I didn't drink when I was pregnant. And so I felt amazing. I didn't like being pregnant or the newborn stage, but I loved the clarity I had. And so I would write and then put it down and then come back and pick it back up. And, you know, I couldn't finish the book, and it was before I got sober. And I was like, what is going on? Why can't I finish this? And then I wrote the last chapters when I got sober. And that was why. You know, I, in the field of clinical work, we've come a long way in terms of the way therapists are looked at, but it used to be, I'm the expert. I don't share any of my own personal information with you. I'm here to help and guide you and unpack your own stuff. And that was kind of some of my training too. And I had worked in a group practice for a psychiatrist who was kind of old school that way too. And once I got sober, she started noticing something different about me. And I just started detaching a little more and started creating my own space to practice the way I wanted to practice. And eventually, you know, 2 years sober, I started my own practice. Some of my clients have read my book, some haven't, but I can tell you this, that everybody wanted to talk about their drinking for those who did read my book that were my clients. And so now my practice is primarily 90% women who are looking at how alcohol plays a role in their life. So that for me was a spiritual shift of like, okay, God, I'm listening. This is what you want me to do. And this is the space I feel really good in. And now with four teenagers, you know, gosh, I couldn't imagine if I was drinking right now. Like, just the modeling, I think, of them knowing you don't have to drink, and also the risks of them drinking. You know, the likelihood is one of four of them will have a problem with addiction. You know, who knows which addiction, right? Shopping, sex, gambling, drugs, alcohol. But we started educating them at an early age because, you know, I come from an alcoholic family or substance use alcohol abusive family. And we didn't talk about it, mm-hmm. you know? And so I always felt so sneaky when I would drink because it was like a bad secret. And so now it's like, we just talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't shame them if they, you know, if they're teenagers, they're experimenting and, you know, they have to have their own process.
You do. We can tell people, until the cows come home, what they should and shouldn't do. But a lot of times until you experience it, you don't know.
Right.
You know? Right. But anyway, so, you know, kind of as we wind down here, what are your current, you said you're a creaster and you light a candle and you get on your knees every night and you try to, you know, talk to God throughout the day. What are your current spiritual curiosities? Are there any outside of your Catholic upbringing? Like I said, I love, you know, I'm interested in Hindu and Buddhist and Hermeticism mm-hmm. and everything. Does any of that fascinate you?
Yes, I like to kind of cafeteria pick from all the religions, you know, but that's why I said yes to talking to you and other people who are spiritually grounded, that for me, it's more of that awakening, kind of like brushing our teeth, right? Like a daily habit of just checking in with self, checking in with higher power, making sure everything's aligned, rather than, you know, more of a ritualistic practice, but more opportunistic, I guess.
Yeah. I go back to church now, because lately I've been called, I just feeling called to do it, but I don't look at things through the eyes that I was trained to. I have taken and done some homework now and learned about all these other philosophies, and even branching into things like the Gnostic Gospels and things that are not canonized biblical text, but are accounts of the life of Jesus and things like that. They get real, real interesting. And I if I were to have a conversation with a Catholic priest, they might be kind of like, oh, we got to get the holy water out. But, but I find it all very fascinating. And when you see it from the lens of like the whole picture, I find it even more satisfying and grounding than the rigid, more rigid dogmatic Catholic structure that you or I probably grew up with.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And, you know, I live in Oak Park, a community right outside of Chicago. And I think we have the most churches and the smallest mileage. And anytime I go for a walk, you know, I'll pass the Catholic church and the doors are always open and I'll, you know, sit and say a prayer. And that's very meditative for me.
Yeah.
So that's quiet.
That's, I'm sorry. Did you have anything?
No, I was just saying, just be experiencing the quiet, especially just, you know, with a family of six.
Yeah.
With that.
Absolutely. So one thing that I ask everybody who comes on here, obviously you have gotten sober. You are consistently working to become more in touch with your spiritual side and allow things to flow. You have been quite successful. I mean, not a lot of people, I go to your social media and I see clips with you and Megyn Kelly and Drew Barrymore and, you know, all the people, right? You've definitely been out there. Somebody's going to watch this and say, wow, that woman is a powerhouse. She's associated with all this, you know, this media attention. She's built a successful business. She's got that awesome book that I'm going to order. You know, what can I start doing today, right now, to be more like Kelly or put together a life more like Kelly? What would be step one? What's one practical thing I can do today?
Getting really honest with whatever that struggle is, you know. I mean, I can only speak to my own experience and what has helped me, and it has been taking ownership of some of the things that I've struggled with, because for most of my life, I just wanted this like shiny looking idea of who I was. And something that I say often is, I want my insides to match my outsides. And for so long, it was like, God, if people knew what was going on inside for me, they would be really scared. And so that first step is just sitting for 5 minutes in quiet and like see what comes up. And then putting pen to paper. You know, there's something that is so spiritually grounding too, to actually get those thoughts out of our head and onto paper and to see them. Oh, and to be able to go and revisit, because we have a tendency to have amnesia and forget. And, you know, it's so good to have those touch points to go back and review. And also, you know, I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist. So being able to measure, right? Like if I pull out old calendars that I had from when I was drinking, it would be like writing down what drinks I had, how many, if I blacked out, you know, if there was a negative consequence. Like to go back and see that and recognize how long I lived in that state is crazy making. And today it doesn't look like that, you know? So to, those are reminders to see how far we've come.
Yeah, that's great. I have moments all the time now where, you know, my wife told me eventually I'd look at my sobriety and my recovery as a badge of honor. And I obviously do, or else I wouldn't be putting myself out in the world like this. But even when I come up against these challenges at work or whatever, and I think I'm this small little powerless person, I take a step back and I look at where I came from. And then I look at what I'm facing and think, wait a second, you know, I did this. This mm-hmm. is nothing, you know? So yeah. I think that's helpful. And that's kind of what you're getting at with that, you know, mm-hmm. looking mm-hmm. back. And am I correct in that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, it, you know, a takeaway is sobriety can be a superpower. You know?
It is.
For so long, it was like, oh, I can't drink. And that first yes. year is so hard. And, you know, the feeling, I felt sorry for myself until I didn't anymore. And then, and, you know, now it's like, if I do that, other things do that, meaning like, don't pick up a drink, mm-hmm. other things fall into place kind of seamlessly, you know, if I keep remembering.
Absolutely. And that's where I'm going with this sober awakening thing. You stop drinking, you start to let, you know, your intuition take over. You'll know what to do intuitively all the yeah. time. When you're drinking, though, it really clouds that intuitive function that
it's
I believe is.
It's a block.
Yeah, yeah, is innate within all of this. So anyway, Kelly, this has been so enjoyable. And I love this conversation we've had. Can you tell everybody where to find you if they want to learn more about you and what you do?
Sure, sure. Kelly Kitley is my, what do you call it, handle? I'm aging myself. What do those kids call it? But I spell my name Kelley.
Yes.
Kitley, Kitley. And I have a YouTube channel that I upload weekly mental health and wellness segments to. And I'm pretty active on Instagram as well. So those are two great places to find resources for taking care of your own mental health.
Awesome. In closing, is there anything you want to say that you have not said yet?
The message that I think is really important, and you opened with this, we have to be gentle with ourselves. You know, it's like, I think even with alcohol behavior changes, we get so wrapped up in the day count and the year count and the, you know, white knuckling. And it's like, look, it is a journey. It is a process. If you slip, get back on the horse, you know, it's like, I felt so stuck because I couldn't get it. You know, I was like, I'm missing something. I can't keep these days together. Why do I keep going back to drinking? If I would have just taken a different approach of like, what can I learn from this? That could have helped.
Okay. Well, great. Kelly, I have so enjoyed this. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for being a new member of the Sober Awakening family and my new friend. We love you for everything you're bringing to the world. And that's it. So
thanks,
thank you,
Tim. Such a pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Sober Awakening podcast. We are so grateful and excited that you're part of this journey. As always, please remember, any businesses, services, or individuals mentioned here are shared because they resonate with our mission. We receive no financial benefit from promoting them. It's all about guiding you toward what inspires and empowers your journey. If you've found value in this podcast, please consider supporting our mission with a tax-deductible donation at www.soberawakening.org. Every contribution helps us continue providing resources and inspiration for those seeking sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. Don't forget to subscribe, share this episode, and visit us at soberawakening.org for more resources and upcoming events. Let's continue this path together toward a life of sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. We love you so much. Until next time, stay sober-minded and intuitively guided.